thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to Monday Night Magic, episode 218. And we are off on a good foot because we were doing... We talked about Magic before the show a little bit. Then we got into disturbing Google searches. We are not going to share what we searched for because when we first searched it, it was fine. When you take Safe Search off, I wanted to vomit. So maybe at the end of the show we'll tell you what we searched, but not right now. Because to help me talk about Magic, because we are a Magic podcast bringing you Magic news, Magic, I have Jack and Marcel. Guys, say hello.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Yes, hello, ladies.
Disturbing pictures are burned in my mental image right now. It's all so horrible.
Yeah, like you almost feel queasy, you know, like when you go on a roller coaster and when you go down, you kind of get that, do you guys get that feeling in kind of the groin region of that lifting feeling?
Like my bowels are about to let loose through my mouth. Yeah, that's kind of what I feel like.
Yeah,
right,
you feel
now.
Nauseous, because like when you get kicked in the crotch, you feel nauseous. It's that kind of nauseous.
You just don't feel right.
Yeah. You feel sort of violated just by what you saw.
It's just dicky. But we do have to talk about Magic at some point tonight, don't we, gentlemen?
Now, Marcel, your voice sounds, it always sounds great, but it sounds even better tonight. What changed? Why weren't you with us for the last few weeks?
I've been having some technical difficulty with my audio interface, so Tom came through and sent some sponsor money, and I got a new headset on going through the USB, so I don't have these problems, and everything's sounding good.
Yeah, the headsets are pretty comfy. I'll have to give these ones credit.
I will say, I can't wait to try it out on StarCraft 2 when that works for me.
And you feel like you're an air traffic controller, because the microphone on these headsets, the little stick it's on is like a adjustable rod, so you can just bend it all over the place. I could put it inside my mouth if I wanted to. That's how bendable that little stick is.
You like adjustable rods. Bendable, adjustable rods for Tom.
So all I know is Tom's headset can fit in his mouth. That's all I got out of that sound.
Speaking of Google searches, we turned up something amazing today that actually would interest Tom as well. Could it be the full art mediotic slime that we...
Yeah, well, or the mitotic slime is. So this came up...
Mediotic, mitotic, vengevine, vagina vine, something like that.
I'm like, mediotic? I'm like, how'd you even... There's not an E in there. And there's an E in slime, but not a mitotic.
Tom, I am clearly an English major, and I know what I'm talking about.
I know my syllables.
I take great insult that you find my way of pronouncing things hideous. So,
so we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and hopefully last week went well. I was gone. I was in Alaska. People didn't know that. I'm back. We'll talk about my vacation later. So I'm not sure how much was talked about this, but the mitotic slime is going to be given out to the people that get top 8 in the M11 game day. And we heard it was going to be a full art mitotic slime. I was already excited. Now we've gotten some scans of what this is going to look like, and it looks fantastic. So it's a full art mitotic slime. The art is different, and if you were going to have me make a picture of a news, this is what I have in my mind. It's kind of this is disturbing after what we looked at before the show. I'm glad it's green. That's all I'm going to say. If it was white, I would just have to stop the show. But it's just this kind of big flow of ooze coming at you. There's a little, what, a pseudopod, I guess, shooting out, eating a bug, and it just looks great. And I think it's also important that they...
Is this foil, Tom?
It looks foil from the scan. I would almost guarantee it's a foil.
Yeah, see the shininess in the corner.
And I think it's pretty important, too, that as much as I would love to have a full art textless one, I think mitotic slime needs to have the text on the card. So I don't think anybody's going to remember it, because I mean, it's pretty easy to remember. It goes 2-2-2s and 4-1-1s. But it's nice to have the reminder on the card for you. And I also want to say thank you to all the listeners that emailed me over the last couple of weeks saying, hey, if I get a top 8, you can have my mitotic slime. That's awesome. I had many, many responses, so I think I'm going to get a mitotic slime no matter what happens. And the other thing, and Marcel, this is one I was speaking with Heath, who runs MTGO Traders, Cape Fear Games, and also PureMTGO.com. They're all kind of under the same umbrella company. And we were kind of chatting a little bit back and forth about the whole dichotomy between paper magic, digital magic, MTGO, how do you go back and forth. And he, as a company, has started this really cool I almost said promotion. It's not a promotion. This is an ongoing just feature of their business and their website. Marcel, do you want to share a little bit more about this?
Yeah, they are actually ahead of the curve. I think this is a very smart business decision, and I hope it takes off for them. So you know how Magic, you can actually trade in your cards to get physical cards from MTGO. Now they worked it around that you can actually trade in your physical paper cards for credits to use on MTGO. So they found a workaround that people can get on and trade old cards they don't need to, so they could try to do the digital gaming. I actually really think this is a really cool idea, and I got a bunch of cards that I want to go through, and I'm gonna see what I could do with them.
Because I know Marcel, when before you're having the audio interface problems, we had gotten a lot of emails for people asking this question, really saying they have some paper stuff, but they want to go mostly to digital because that's where they do most of their playing these days. And how can they do that? And we're trying to come up with, you know, selling stuff for tickets and yada blah 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 blah, or selling your cards and buying tickets. Here you can just trade it in and you actually get a bonus 20%, and then you get digital cards right out of the deal. Man, yes, that's pretty slick.
Cuts to the chase, and I mean, they market it right to get it out there. I think, you know, people will definitely buy this because it's a great way of getting your digital going on, because it's a real hard transition. This just makes it easier.
Now, Marcel, do you play any paper Magic at all, or are you pretty much solely MTGO?
I do got a cube with my brother. We got a good amount of cards from way back, so we do got a nice little cube, and I do play like pre-releases, releases, and drafting in paper. But once I get the cards, they either go in the cube or I sell them.
Okay, so here you can actually do a more direct transition to those, the few paper cards you get into MTGO cards.
Exactly, and I need to do that with this M11. I need a couple of them Titans and a Frost Titan also.
I have. Before I left on the vacation, Steve and some friends of Steven, this has happened every once in a while where you go to play Magic and this is more of a kitchen table experience. And if you played Magic for a long time, when you first started playing Magic, there's a group of you. And when I first started playing this, you know, 15 years ago, I went to the LGS, the local game store. That was an acronym. I had a listener email in. I thought it was pretty good. So the local LGS, you know, you had this group of players. I haven't seen some of these guys in probably 10 years. I go to this M11 draft. This guy got a bunch of boxes. He just wanted to draft the packs. And I walk in there, and it's like it was going into a time machine. It was 15 years ago. These are the exact same group of guys that were at that local game store at this guy's place for an M11 draft. It was truly kind of mind-bending. Have you guys ever had that happen?
Oh, yeah, like people you don't know, haven't seen in years just randomly show up, and it's like, hey, I haven't seen you since heavy metal was actually popular. What's up?
Was heavy metal ever actually popular?
Yes, it was, Tom. Okay. Yes, it was.
Okay. So, Jack, for you, would you ever be interested in kind of transitioning some of your digital or paper cards to digital cards?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. As I've said many, many times on here, I actually use Magic Workstation for a lot of my online play.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, but at the same time, I could see where this is actually a very smart business decision on Cape Fear Games, and it's definitely going to earn them a lot of moolah in the process. I mean, this is a really good idea. You know, and maybe a couple of other businesses will take the same incentive and reach out to the community and try to help the online players like this by giving them that outlet.
Well, I guess it's always nice to have options. It's nice that they're starting to have this bridge between the two products. It was always weird that MTGO is just digital paper Magic, but they're really... was no crossover besides that you could turn in a set of digital cards to get a set of paper cards.
And there's always been kind of that stigma to it, which is, you know, along with the obvious cost, has kind of kept me and probably a couple of other people from actually playing it.
So I want to say, I thought it was pretty cool. Heath just let me know about this, wanted to share it with everybody else. And kind of going on the money gravy train, and this, we've talked about this, that there's just been this avalanche of non-Wizards big cash money tournament events. You know, Channel Fireball, we have Star City Games, I mean, we got piles of them, you know, TCG Player got into it, and in some ways, TCG Player has now kind of stepped up the ante a little bit. Did you guys see this press release for their new announcement regarding their championship series?
Their mega, mega money series?
Yes.
We love it. Keep pumping money into the player base.
So we'll kind of give you a little bit of a review of the press release that came from TCGPlayer.com. And this is the TCGPlayer.com Championship Series. And it says, gamers can win big at Wizards World Comic Con. October 1st to the 3rd, Big Ammo Big Apple Comic Con. That's tough to say. First in a series of 10K events that are leading up to a 75K finals in Chicago in 2011. If you add up all the money given out through all of these 10Ks leading to the 75K, it's $250,000. That is crazy to me.
Oh, I mean, a quarter of a million, Tom. Come now. That's petty cash, really. I mean, it's just a quarter of $1 million. Allow me to repeat that.
The sad thing, actually, is if you add my school debt and my wife's school debt, it's more than that.
Oh, dude, I'm
like quite a bit
so hard right now.
I can't become a doctor after that one.
No, it was like once you get these statements in the mail, and it's so big, it doesn't even seem real anymore. You're like, yeah, whatever, $300,000. You're like,
well, they're
that's the way I roll.
Gynecologist.
What?
Nothing. Anyways, so $250,000. Good grief, that's a lot of dough.
Yeah. So the finals will be at the Chicago Comic Con in 2011. So that is pretty cool. So at each Wizards World convention, there'll be two main Magic events, and they'll have a bunch of smaller events. Each main event will be $5,000 in prizes. It'll be a standard tournament on Saturday, and then a sealed tournament on the Sunday right after that. They'll have all the different side events. And apparently the tournament organizer for, it must be for TCGPlayer.com, is actually Rob Doherty, which I didn't know.
And isn't he a former Hall of Famer?
He is. Thank you for reading the press release.
Yeah, I actually had no idea who he was until I read this. So,
Tom,
yeah.
Are the events also DCI sanctioned? Yes, they are, Marcel. Thank you for asking.
Hey, I'm having to dial it in this week. I'm a little out of it. I apologize. I haven't had all the coffee I need to properly bring the quality of broadcasting that I normally bring, which is very low anyways. So.
And quasi-related to this, I want to say kudos to Wizards to try. I think they finally are trying to stop the phenomenon that casual Magic players have roughly 75 different DCI numbers. And how they did this is just in the mail when I was gone, through the Magic Player Rewards program, I got it looks like a credit card. It's a plastic card, shaped like a credit card. It says Magic Player Rewards, and it has my DCI number on the back. So I finally have not a flimsy piece of tissue paper where if you look at it, it just disintegrates. Or if it gets washed, it also disintegrates. This is an actual plastic card I can keep in my wallet where I'll actually use the same DCI number for more than one tournament.
Actually, those have been fairly common for up to a year, I think.
I guess until I started doing more of the pre-releases and some drafts, I never got enough points to actually get an NPR reward.
You were just not important enough to have a fancy plastic car, Tom, huh?
I was not. So apparently this is old news.
You were one of the cool kids.
But I was excited for it.
Absolute.
Now, Marcel, for you as being more of an MTGO guy, I'm playing devil's advocate. Does this ever kind of irritate you or rankle you the wrong way that the paper Magic guys are getting all, or women, sorry, I don't want to make anybody angry.
Keep it politically correct.
That they are getting all these big money tournaments where MTGO is getting some, but if you compare it to paper Magic, it is way, way behind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily good enough, or I don't think I am good enough, but to play in the big, big money tournaments, but I would like to have them there. It'd be a nice, good option. And promo cards, they just started now doing promo cards recently. Not nearly quite as good or, you know, as player rewards and paper Magic, but, you know, hopefully I feel like as MTGO becomes more of their mainstay, they'll start promoting it harder.
I guess it's also hard is that, unlike paper Magic, where, you know, any person could become a tournament organizer, Wizards controls the... It's like if every paper Magic tournament had to get their tables and chairs from Wizards of the Coast. That's kind of the way MTGO is.
And it kills that whole social aspect, too. So, I mean, a lot of people won't transition to that. But, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. MTGO is here to stay, and you know, so it's a good and a bad. So you did what you like from paper Magic, you go to paper Magic for that, the social aspect. If you're really just trying to play game after game after game and a lot of different variety of cards, and you go online. So it's a two ways you can go at it.
You wish you could kind of peer into what's coming in the next big client update. So it seems like if they could implement some sort of a local tourney feature where you could almost like parcel off like your own chat area or something through the MTGO client, then have people show up and play through that, you could have local, I guess, non-official tournaments, but using the MTGO client and the product.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Or somehow they could work, you could do cubes, you know, more develop the social aspect, because the multiplayer is really bad online. And, I mean, you need that aspect when you play Magic. That's the one thing I do miss about it. But, I mean, you go so far, unless everybody's got a headset, we could talk to each other.
Yeah, and then having some sort of chat built in, too. Yeah, I agree with you. I know I'm going to get insulted and might hear something I don't want to hear. But until I can really talk with people, that would be a big barrier to that.
Because there's nothing like having a 12-year-old scream at you and say you suck monkey balls every voice
chat. Yeah. And I also say, in Paper Magic, apparently, since I've had some people does not talk to me either, so I am working on my rating. I do not talk during matches. Thumbs up, buddy. Boo, you're awesome.
You're the best.
This is good times. Good times. And that's where, you know, it's a moral challenge where you know you should be the better person, but I always fail that test. Like that... I have a little bit of I don't have full-blown oppositional defiant disorder, but I definitely have some oppositional defiant tendencies. Like, this is actually, my wife has experienced this, where I get into, especially with police and things like that, it just shoots up. Like, I've gotten jaywalking tickets and all types of stuff, because I just can't control myself.
What do you mean? Like, you go off on the police officer? And...
A little bit, yeah. And for me, I've really identified as when I'm faced with an authority figure that I don't know, and they're expecting that I will treat them with respect, like they deserve respect, but I don't know them, that's where it comes. You know, sometimes, like, you know, I work with staff physicians who, you know, like, I know them, I know how, you know, what they publish, how good they are, so there, yeah, it's fine. Like, I completely understand. But when I was in Egypt, and I was trying to get into the Cairo Museum, the Cairo Egypt Museum, is they have the most amazing collection of Egyptian historical artifacts is in Cairo. I mean, they just have thousands, probably even millions of objects that they can't even display. They just have them stacked around. And when you go in there, you actually have to, and it's all military police. We went there right before the military coup happened. I don't know if you guys followed Egyptian politics, but there's a big military coup that happened. We were there right before that, so the current people that were in power at that time, they were a little nervous. So there's a lot of military police around. And when you go in there, you have to go through a metal detector. And I had this little tiny mini Leatherman, you know, where, like, folds open to, like, a little scissors. There's like a 1 centimeter blade on it. I mean, I couldn't kill a rat with this thing, let alone another human being. But I had it in my pocket. So I went to go through the metal detector. I knew I was going to go off, so I put in their little tray. And there's a military police with an AK-47 standing there.
You did not smart off to the gun-toting cop, did you?
I did. So he only knew one word in English, and that was weapon. So he's holding this little Leatherman, just yelling at me, "Weapon, weapon!" And I'm like, "No, I want my knife back." Like, it was engraved. A gift.
And Marcel, you know what's bad is I can just imagine the news in Cairo that evening. It would just broadcast Tom's face and him going, "Beat the police! I don't even care."
My wife's like, or we weren't married at that time. She's like, "I don't know who he is. Nope. Complete stranger to me." But anyways, I'm not sure how we got there, guys. How did we just get there?
I don't know, but we do have the Mana Nation article we have up on the show notes. This is me being Eric this week.
Yes, well, we need that. And the reason that we're talking about this Mana Nation article is, I just discovered these pretty recently, is Eric and Lyndon over at Mana Nation, he'll do This Week in Magic. And really, this is Monday Night Magic, but more well done in a written form. It is pretty much every tidbit of Magic news you can think of, and it's even well organized into tournament news, Standard, Limited, Legacy, Extended, Casual, Ongoing. It's crazy. It's really, really well done.
Also known as Eric's Super Secret Stash.
Yeah, I think this is what he's been using on me, and he didn't tell me that. he is a bearded liar, is what he is.
No, though it is much better written and well done than Monday Night Magic, that is not to say that you should stop listening to the show, for you'll lose all the witty banter that we have to offer you this week.
Yeah, you can pause it, go read this, come back and be like, yeah, I already heard that and already read that. Give me something new.
Send us an angry email about it, yeah.
Yeah, I like to get those. But no, and I did want to say thank you to Eric for joining us tonight, but thank you, Eric, for manning the show for this past week. It's not a complicated process to get the show up, but it is a process. I know it like the back
of
my hand.
It's a lot of work to get us all together, too.
Yes, it is. It is like herding blind cats. So we were kind of going through this, and why it was helpful to have this article this week is this past weekend, we apparently had more tournaments that have ever happened at one time ever in the history of Magic. because we have nationals going on. So we had nationals occurring in, deep breath, Italy, Australia, France, Canada, Malaysia, Austria, Guatemala, Romania, Costa Rica, and El Salvador.
So there's an instance of every Titan here except for the Inferno Titan. So I find that kind of interesting.
And Eric, in the end, Eric is going to be right where the Frost Titan is actually not bad and is actually probably going to be a really, really good card.
Well, yeah, Mike Flores actually went over it talking about how it could, you know, tap down any other Titan after Destructive Force is actually a very hard thing to deal with. So it's interesting to see that card actually, you know, is getting constructive play and it might actually be near one of the top decks once Jund rotates out.
Let's see. We can kind of give you some of the quick winners of the Australian National Championships. We want to say congratulations to Adam Wittens. He won with the red-green ramp at Canada, which I was pretty close. Actually, I went through Vancouver, so I technically was in Canada. We have Jay Ellerar. I am sorry. I know I'm going to be butchering these. let's see. Next, in France, some of these pictures are just terrible. I'm sorry. We have Julien Perez is the Championship of France. And I mean, this is not a little thing to scoff at. This is a national championship. Hey, that's pretty cool to be winning these things. And what we'll do is Conley may be able to join us a little bit later today, or he'll be back with us next week. And we're going to save some of that in-depth tourney discussion for him, because if I were to try to do that, I don't know what I'm talking about.
I understand.
I mean, there were a couple of handful of breakouts, and Jack, you may want to talk about this, is in some ways people are decrying that Turbo Fog is back.
What's this? The most boring deck in the format is actually coming back?
Yes.
What have I been told?
So very kind of a blue-white, I would call it Turbo Fog, you know, Angel Song, with Temple Bell, and then the Immortal Elixir coming back in with M11. These decks are starting to make a comeback.
Oh, that is so cute and tricky. It's amazing.
Yes. Not only are you getting, you're holding off their attacks with your Angel Songs and your
That's
time
actually
warps.
Much better than where people used to use Quest for Ancient Secrets or whatever it was that Terrible Blue Enchantment was called.
Yes.
And I'm sure you gentlemen know this. Red and aggro have sometimes been, or quick aggro, I should say, have kind of been a problem for Turbo Fog where that early life loss really hurts you as you try to stabilize into the later game. Elixir of Immortality actually smooths that out and makes it a lot easier. That's great. I love that.
And another deck I thought was pretty cool is in the top eight for the Australian National Championship, there was a deck they had. It was red, green, blue. It had three Frost Titans, three Primeval Titans, and Destructive Force was another card that, you know, Conley talked about a lot when we were going through our M11 discussion, and Destructive Force really made a big breakout in the National Championships. People realizing really how good this card was and is.
Five damage and five lands. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, pretty much. If you only have five lands out, you are pretty much going to be winning that game.
But I read recently...
Oh, go ahead, Marcel.
The Preserver, I forgot what it's called, the Tahedron Preserver from the last set, the Rise of Eldrazi, that actually stops the land destruction from happening. So that's a way that you could combat that, the Destructive Force. So I read about that.
Oh, okay. It's kind of a sideboard tech for that.
Yeah, definitely. That's something. If you got green, put that in there because that's going to save you.
And obviously, in a lot of these decks, we're still seeing a lot of Baneslayer Angels. And Jack, you're telling us a little bit about before the show is that even Wizard of the Coast is now officially saying that maybe Baneslayer shouldn't be around anymore.
Well, it wasn't necessarily that maybe Baneslayer shouldn't be around anymore. Brad actually is going to get the credit for this. Sent me an email earlier in the week where it was Mark Rosewater had an article where he basically came out and he said, yeah, we know that mythics are kind of overpriced, but there's a reason certain cards become mythic and a reason certain cards don't become mythic. And he actually cited cards like Baneslayer Angel and Vengevine, not Vengevine.
Vengevine just sounds cooler to me. I don't know why it sounds, because I get this vegetable feeling out of it.
You know, honestly, there are times I say things on this show just to see if I'll get hate mail about them. I'm a horrible person like that. But anyways, and he cited those as examples. And basically, there's a lot of things that come into play in that, like, you know, limited, obviously, as a consideration. But also, like, does a card kind of, like, does it feel mythic or not? And he talked a lot about the feeling of mythics. Baneslayer Angel, by Mark Rosewater's definition, feels mythic. And honestly, I could tend to agree with him on that. It's definitely a very, very powerful card, and it's more flavorful than anything. To me, Baneslayer Angel definitely deserves to be a mythic. stuff like Vengevine or Vaginavine or whatever you want to say there. Maybe not so much, but definitely it's on the Mothership site. I don't have the exact link at my disposal, but I would tell folks to go check it out. It's a really good read. I think it's in the series where he was addressing questions he was getting on Twitter. So okay. There you go.
And do you guys think it would be helpful for me just to run through what the top deck list was for each of the championships?
Well, you know, we are going down the drain, and we don't really offer any Magic content anymore, so maybe that would redeem us a little bit.
Canada is kind of our classic. JLR was playing the classic kind of white-blue control deck. Australia, Adam Witten was playing this red-green, it's an Avenger of Zendikar, Primeval Titan, Siege Gang Commander deck, which is pretty cool. So you got the Explore, Harrow, Cultivate, Colonize, Hard Expedition, Rampant Growth, so pretty cool. It's a landfall deck. Romania was one with Jund, and then for a lot of the other ones, I don't have the exact deck list, but I can tell you that Malaysia was won by Jason, I don't know how to pronounce, NG is the last name, and then Costa Rica was won by Miguel Gattaca. So I just want to say congratulations to everybody that won their national championships. That's a pretty huge thing to do. And kind of here on home turf for me being the U.S., is we also had a Grand Prix Columbus this past weekend. And I think if you follow the tournament scene at all, the person that won is someone that you know well. Did any of you guys check out the coverage for GP?
No, I didn't. Sorry.
The silence answers you perfectly, actually.
and this, I always get in trouble because I never pronounce his name correctly, but Tomoharu Saito won GP Columbus. So we just wanted to say congratulations. Pull up the thing right now. And this was a legacy tournament. And the talk was is that the people doing well in this tournament, in a lot of ways, did not potentially have a lot of previous legacy experience. So for Tomoharu, this is his latest victory. It's legacy. This is the first time he's ever won a big legacy professional tournament. And he was playing, pretty fun to see. It's a fish deck. You got Coral Helm. Go ahead, Jack.
I was going to say, I think actually the use of Coral Helm Commander over Tormagoif is really interesting, especially considering Tormagoif's prevalence in Legacy.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to kind of see more about these matches. It was just to help keep the mana base cleaner? I'm not sure.
Well, it was probably due to Mirror Rageri's interaction with it, but I mean, at the same time, that's really that's a definite shift away from fish. Now, I haven't studied the list recently, but at the same time, that's awesome. I mean, I'm glad to see that people are using something other than the big green baddie for their decks.
And then Brad Nelson, who I believe is our North Dakota star, also made the top 8 and really had never played much Legacy before this tournament. And apparently there's all these stories that he had to continually actually have to ask opponents what their cards did. That always has to instill confidence. What is that? What does that one do? But I also can imagine people probably have a lot of either foreign language cards or foils or something like that where you just may not recognize that card.
Well, I mean, we also have, the Dark that actually had different alternate art cards all the time for it.
Oh, yeah.
Imna Turok had 4 different arts for it.
Yeah, multiple different printings with different things. I was pulling up, Brad ended up playing kind of white, black, green, good stuff. You got Dark Confidant, Tarmogoyf, Night of the Reliquary, Gerard's Verdict, Him to Turok, Permissious Deed, Vindicate, Thought Seizes, good stuff, white, black, green. Or I guess is that the rock when you're playing with Pernicious Deed? Is that still considered a rock variant?
Well, considering the definition of a rock deck, it's just something that uses backbreaking spells to alter the pace of the game. You could argue, yes, that is in fact a rock variant.
I will take it then. And we talk about the tournaments, we talk a little bit about the decks, but a Grand Prix is more than just a tournament. There is side events, there's boosts, there's all other types of stuff going on at a Grand Prix. And this is a story I thought was a little strange, and I have a link to the YouTube video in the show notes for you to go check out. So apparently at some point during the tournament is that this kind of very, very lighthearted, I guess, rivalry came up between Patrick Chapin and Jerry Thompson. And at some point this apparently came off as the video starts off, this is an interview with Gary Thompson, and it shows Chapin kind of behind him, trying to sneak up on him, and eventually he comes up and he puts a pie in his face. So apparently Jerry was a very good sport about this. What would you guys do if you're at a tournament? I don't know if you have a change of clothes with you at the thing, and someone came up and put a pie in your face. I think I would just freak the shit out of myself.
Well, obviously, I would take off my white lace gloves that I wear, especially for dueling, and smack him in the face with it.
Yes, I do declare you to a duel, sir.
The only way it would be worse is if Patrick Chapin actually wobbled away and was like, whoop, 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 whoop.
So I just know what you guys thought about this. I mean, it's funny. It's a classic thing to do, I guess, to put a pie in someone's face. I'm a 31-year-old man. I've never actually thrown a pie in a person's face.
I would love to do it one day. I wish I could have done it to an ex-president we had.
Was it our most recent ex-president, perhaps?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know if you're just really against, like, Howard Taft or something like that.
Now, as often as I get things mispronounced, nuclear, really?
I just imagine Howard Taft then licking the pie off his face so he could eat it. You're wasting good pie!
Right in front of his illegitimate child.
So I want to take a look at the video. I just want to hear what people thought about this. Obviously, it was lighthearted, joking in nature. Apparently, I'm a bitter old man because that would still piss me off if somebody put a pie in my face. I don't care how lighthearted it is. When I'm in public and like not next to a pool where I can immediately wash myself off, I'm going to be angry.
Well, I mean, how even then, though, it would still be in your clothes, so you would have to like either dive in and like a graceful swan and pray the batting the icing comes off of you, or have to scrub hard, Tom.
Dude, sometimes those that never comes clean. And the other, I mean, there's lots of stuff happened, but the other big controversy that happened at Grand Prix Columbus was a player was disqualified for apparently betting on himself. So I'm getting this from the StarkingtonPost.com, and I will read Bill Stark's very good overview of this. Is Drew Levin and Craig Wesco were paired to play against one another in round 16, so the final round of the Swiss. A win would potentially put Drew Levin into the top eight. After managing to beat Wesco, Levin allegedly was quoted as saying, quote, "I just won a 50-1 bet that I would make top eight," end quote. Wesco, his opponent, then allegedly called for a judge who ruled that Levin had to be disqualified for betting on the outcome of a tournament. And the specific floor rule that was mentioned was 5.3, wagering from the tournament floor rules, and Bill Stark has the exact text. 5.3, wagering. Tournament participants, tournament officials, and spectators may not wager, ante, or bet on any portion, including the outcome of a tournament match or game. Wesco his opponent did not end up making the top eight, and the final standings do not include Drew Levin's name. So this is an indication that he was disqualified after being paired for the 16th round, because he was kind of expunged from the record.
That's why you got to keep your mouth shut at a major tournament, man. Yeah. Should have learned something from Pete Rose.
So I felt we had this whole discussion about the whole Esper Charm mode thing. To me, it felt like this was nothing that could be proven. It wasn't like somebody came up and handed him a $100 bill saying, "Hey, way to go, buddy, you bet on yourself." He was just kind of lightly saying, "Hey, you know, I bet that I was finally making the top eight, and here I am."
Exactly. Now
I'd be like, how is that really? I feel like
he might have said, like, he might have admitted to it. That's probably what happened or something.
Yeah, and this is something where we're basing this off of the alleged, these quotes that we have. I wasn't there. But if this is truly what happened, I think I'd be a little beyond annoyed at my opponent of Craig Wesco, that I feel like this floor rule was really bent and used in a way it wasn't meant to.
I'll just come out and say it. That's a dick move. I mean, what if the guy did bet? You know, this probably is going to go into a whole, it perverts the game and everything else. But if the gentleman had simply said it in a lighthearted kind of casual way, that is a dick move. That is a major dick move to pull that.
Yeah, and does that really change the outcome of the game when you're betting on yourself?
Because if you lose, obviously, it doesn't matter. And if anything else, it's just major motivation to work harder at the match.
So I this one, you know, we don't mention every controversial thing that happens at a GP or a big tournament. This one I just thought was interesting because I admit, in my mind, I'm like, hey, I don't think that was quite right what happened, judging on what we know of the story. So that's why I wanted to hear what you guys thought, also the listeners, about. Do you feel like this was one of those cases where the rules were used inappropriately to potentially rob somebody of a top eight at a GP?
Indeed. They robbed him. They robbed him wrong. And the guy that called made the call, I mean, he was on his way to losing, so, I mean, he just is a cop-out. That's all it is.
Yeah, he had,
can't,
go
he
ahead,
can't
Tom,
win.
You mean somebody would willfully pervert the rules of magic to win a round?
Yeah, in my mind, like, this is in some ways the same as cheating in any other way. You're abusing the game state or the rules to get a win that you didn't deserve. Like, he'd already lost.
it's not flat-out cheating, but the matter of the fact is, I mean, he had already lost the match.
Moral
the gentleman
cheating.
Simply came out and said, oh, I want a 50-1 bet. The game is over. Let it go, man.
Sore loser.
Yeah, I just... And I think what brings this cry up more and makes it more poignant is that it happened to somebody who potentially could have made the top eight, you know, getting pro points and all that other stuff that goes with that. And his opponent didn't really benefit from it. He didn't get into the top eight.
So like, at all. That's a true douchebag for
you. Yeah, you're like, you're asshole. That's what you are right now.
Asshole certified.
Going back to what I've said before, I mean, there's trolling outside. There's trolling in Magic, and then there's trolling outside of the game that is really, really bad. That's trolling outside the game to me.
So, you know, send us what you think about this. And obviously, if there's any more of the story that we haven't heard, I would love to know more. So I don't want to besmirch. I always want to use the word besmirch on some sort of a public.
You using your word wall, Tom, every day.
But or so Drew Levin or Craig Wesco, if there's by any chance you listen to this or a friend of yours is listening, getting very angry or agreeing with me a whole lot, gets a hold of you, let me know. I'm happy to revisit this if I have unfairly slighted somebody, but I don't think so. So Craig Wesco, watch out.
Watch out.
Calling you out right now on the show.
So how's that new tactics game coming up?
The new tactics game, and this is something, apparently these screenshots have been out for a while. I had not seen these. So Magic the Gathering Tactics, this is going to be the next digital Magic property. This is not Duels of the Planeswalkers, which is, in a lot of ways, it's like Magic the Gathering Online, where it's another way for you to play the existing card game of Magic. MTG Tactics, unfortunately, seems to be sharing a little more of a pedigree with Magic the Gathering Battlegrounds, which all of us, when you hear that, you immediately want to like pinch your nipple just to get rid of that thought out of your mind. So you need a little bit of pain to not remember MTG Battlegrounds.
So that was horrible.
Oh, God. I told the story before. If you haven't listened for a while, you're going to sit through it again. I think the game came out about 8 years ago. I'd have to look up it exactly. 8-some years ago. Kind of call
was
it,
this the fighting game where you would cast your spells?
Yeah, you picked up little crystal shards and you kind of had spells.
Oh, God. But I was so embarrassed to be a Magic player.
You actually smacked the little Llanowar elves with your staff. It was ridiculously stupid and annoying game.
It was made for drug users. You had to be on crack or speed to play that game.
Yeah, you need to be able to like, click like 300 times a second to be able to beat to death all the things your opponent was sending at you.
Yeah, despite appearances, Mortal Kombat and Magic have nothing in common together.
So how I got this game, I was kind of college age, so I didn't have a ton of money. This was around the time when it was one of the McDonald's games where they had the Monopoly, where not only did you get the game pieces to put on the game board, but you also got those Best Buy bucks, where it was like $1 off of a purchase through their website. I dug through trash off of dirty trays. I wiped ketchup and stuff off of these things. I had a whole pile of them, so I got the game for like, you know, it was $50 retail. I think I used the maximum, so it was like $20 cash that whatever I ended up paying for it.
Wow, you
still felt cheated. I still have the disc. And I was going to actually do a review for the site, and I couldn't make myself play it again. I started playing it, I'm like, I got so angry again, I couldn't do it.
I understand. So, I really want to play a video game for Magic that's successful, and I mean, when they finally do it, I'll be happy. Until then, I'm just going to not talk about it.
So, Magic the Gathering Tactics, unfortunately, when you hear the description of this and announced in November 2009, an innovative online 3D-based game on the Magic the Gathering. And G4 here, and this is from July 29th, they did a preview of the game. And in a lot of ways, they were not super impressed by this. And they feel that this game was trying to appeal to more of the casual side. It's turn-based. You play as a Planeswalker. Obviously, there's 5 colors of mana. It's like the card game, but instead of having a library that you shuffle, all the cards that you have in your deck, or they're in your hands. Pretty much like your library is your hand. You have access to all of them at the same time. This is your spell book. And the game is not played just by flopping cards on the table. You have this grid-based way you can actually move your Planeswalker, and then also the creatures that you have cast. So there's also this strategy element to it as well. And that you can look at the screenshots. I'll have a link in the show. It looks pretty good. I mean, nothing amazing. And you can also take a look through the entire go-through by G4. But in the end, they were not overly impressed. There's going to be a single-player campaign where you work through, you level up your Planeswalker, you get more spell slots. There's going to be lots of multiplayer, because it's going to be hopefully for online. You potentially have some two-headed giant, like 2v2. And there's also going to be an auction house where you can sell and purchase cards. right now, as far as we know, this is not like I'm going to be, this is not a microtransaction-based event. You are not paying real money for this. This is where they presume that you're trading some sort of in-game currency where I get tactic bucks for winning this many matches or maybe getting these achievements, and I can use those to buy new cards. It's going to be coming in the fall for the PC and the PlayStation 3. But in the end, they just recommend that if you are really looking for a Magic experience, especially on the console, it's just to go for Duels of the Planeswalkers. That's going to get what you probably want out of Magic, and likely is going to be for less money. I'll try to keep an open mind. The screenshots look interesting, but for anybody that played Battlegrounds, it's such a bad first impression from that, that it doesn't have to be an amazing game for me to try it.
Tom saying he's going to keep an open mind is a polite way of saying he's not going to consider it at all, folks.
No. unless they give me some really amazing ooze-based promo in this thing, it's going to be a tough sell.
I mean, because we're very transparent here, and bribes work really well with us.
They do. Send me free stuff, as usual, we'll give you a good mention. What else do we have on here?
There is this thing from the Starkington Post. Oh, no, wait. Oh, wow. Misreading the show notes.
Good work, buddy.
Wait,
good work.
I'm trying. Oh, we do have our Sci-Fi Channel premium content we were going to talk about here.
Premium? What are they talking about?
The Sci-Fi original movies In on the Joke.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's actually in listener emails. So you skipped for about half of the show.
Well, I like to travel in my time machine when I'm on here. I like to keep you ahead, constantly moving forward. Not that I'm egotistical, but I really think I'm what keeps the show going some weeks.
A little bit this week. By doing that, you're skipping entire segments of the show that I actually like. So we're rolling this one back. I'm going to be the Walmart guy today. We're going to roll this back.
All right, but just keep in mind who's shouldering all the responsibility. I mean, I even do the editing some weeks all by myself.
Oh, wow.
He is lying.
I'm the only man.
You were the glue that holds us together.
Yeah, I do the minimal editing that does happen, I do. Which I have gotten down to a bare minimum.
Anyways, absolutely. Back when we were talking about relevant information instead of my bullshitting.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the matching news that we have. We'll be going through a little bit more of the results from huge number of tournaments that came out, because it's a lot to go through. We're digesting to these big changes to Standard and Legacy and other things like this, with M11 coming out. Be readdressing these, more talk about Limited. What I want to talk a little bit about is what we've been playing in Magic. So I'm going to hand it off to, we'll start with you, Marcel. Did you get any Magic in this week? Any new favorite decks or combos or trades, whatever you got? Cooking show things? I'll take whatever you can give me.
I've been playing with the Sacron the Mad and with Batotic Slime. I've been playing like a sacrifice deck that uses that and the...
Get some dragons out of it.
Yeah, get the dragons, use Bloodgeist to get... he could come back into play. What else is the slime, the enchantment where you sacrifice a creature and then you get a slime creature.
Oh, that's Ooze-Guard.
Ooze-Guard, yes, exactly. Using that too. It's a fun deck. It's a little casual, so it's not necessarily up there competitively, but it's very fun. I enjoy it. It might be a little too good for casual rooms, so I play it in the tournament practice, but I love the deck. I like sacrificing stuff, bringing stuff back, and it's a fun deck to play.
And what about for you, Jack?
As we all know, I'm so important that I've actually been trying to organize most of the events at our local store because, I mean, once again, without me, communities just fail. So, anyways, we recently had a huge, huge, huge multiplayer EDH game at our store, and I was playing Shroom because I'm a horrible person that loves to ruin the game for everybody.
You are.
I am, and I take full pride and acceptance of that fact in my life now. But we had a massive 3-hour game where I was constantly recurring Oblivion Stone with Academy Runes. So every time somebody would get something out of the field.
You can't see the hand gesture I'm giving you right now.
No, I know you're full. it wasn't that bad.
The hands moving up and down. We'll give you a hint of what it is.
At any point, somebody could have played, even though they were playing green, they could have taken the consideration of Splash for Blue and played Stifle, Trick Bind, any counter spell printed in existence to keep me from playing that spell for one turn. They could have done that, but you know, that's them. They decided to play green. So eventually the game ended in a draw because we were all hungry and people were starting to get angry at me, so we quit.
Yeah, at least you have a little bit of common sense. Wow, they're about to beat me to death. Maybe we should go eat.
Oh, yeah. After burritos, everybody were a lot happier. And no, I did not treat them to it because I'm, once again, a horrible person. Speaking of being horrible, recently on Magic Workstation, which, by the way, if anybody would ever like to play me in a game on Magic Workstation, my name that I go under is always the one I use for the show, jack@mtgcast.com.
Cheapskate douchebag.
Anyways, so the other deck I've been playing online is I've been having a lot of fun playing All In Red lately. That deck is so hilariously great. I've actually talked about this on my blog and some of my Magic Workstation entries, but I've been playing a version of the deck where you basically go like Seething Song first turn and get out Deus of Calamity or Demigod of Revenge. Like, that's the whole point of the deck. You just work up so hard and then you just damage all over their face. And usually,
you need help. Especially after what we looked at before the show. I can't believe you went
there. I go...
You are Mr. Leather today. Jack is Mr. Leather. I'm writing down.
You know, I haven't powered it either, so... Jack, just adds to the allure, really. But I go first turn Deus of Calamity, and I always had people quit or log off as soon as I do that. It's hilarious. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do a pauper version of the deck. So I took out Deus of Calamity and all them, put in more burn, and added Empty the Warrens, right? So I had a turn where I got, like, 9 mana or whatever, and I did, like, Lightning Bolt, plus all the necessary ramp spells, played Empty the Warrens, and got out, like, 10 tokens. Why somebody would concede to that is beyond me. They just as easily could have gone turn 2 Pyroclasm, you know? But people just like to quit, I guess.
What do you know what your opponent was playing against you in Popper?
No, I had no idea what the guy was playing because I did all this on my first turn, and he just folded.
Yeah, it does sound like Magic sounds like a fun game. I really want to play this game called Magic with you.
His argument for it was because we were talking in the chat window. He's like, this seems like a tournament deck instead of a casual deck because I just posted my deck as casual fun. So I was like,
casual fun.
I thought I presented a logical argument. I said there's no rares in this deck, so it can't possibly be a competitive deck.
Was he also playing Pauper or not?
No, he wasn't playing Pauper. He was just playing casual. I thought it was a perfectly logical argument. Because we all know that rares are what dictate a deck. Just look at Standard. Oh, the hate mail I'm getting.
I'm interested because I can see there is two sides to that argument. Where, yes, it is inherently more casual because you are restricting your card pool. And that's why I like things like Tribal and EDH. I think that's why that's fun. But I can see why you'd be pissed off with casual fun is the name of the game. That's fairly entertaining.
But I was having fun, and it was casual. It wasn't in any particular...
All in casual. That should be the name of the game.
All in casual, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, what I do to have fun is just different than what other people do to have fun. That's really unfortunate.
And when I said
suck the fun out of other people to enjoy it for yourself.
You are a griefer, it sounds like, basically.
No. I am not a griefer. There is a huge difference between being a griefer and being a professional dick to survive in the game.
You're a leech.
I had a whole entry on this I was going to write up about how you could be a dick in Magic and survive the game, but I fell asleep, unfortunately, before we got on here tonight. So there you go. Be looking forward to it in my upcoming couple of days. There we go.
And when I was emailing to set up our time here to record tonight, I was ashamed to say this, but I had put together a new EDH deck in some ways channeled a little bit of Jack into it. Nowhere as bad as what he just discussed, so I wish I hadn't even said that. I feel like I mislabeled this by saying that I was like Jack. But I put together... And this is a way in some way for EDH where sometimes you really design a deck to go with your general, sometimes you just need it to be those colors and you just pick whatever random general matches that. So... The name of my deck is Mathematician's Wet Dream. So I want to try to make a deck where it made every spell cost as much to cast as humanly possible. And then, like, every time you cast a spell, you basically have a number of different calculators out to figure out how much it costs to actually have that spell be cast. So I just want to make this deck be as slow as possible, sit there, and eventually just kill them with an unblockable, the Creeping Manland. The blue-black
one. Creeping Tarpon.
Creeping, there, thank you. And eventually just kill them with that. So I'm going to go through the cards that I'm using in my annoying-ass new EDH deck that has been a ton of fun.
Tom, you were giving me the vapors just talking about this thing.
And then when you start to put together these kind of... EDH loves Transmute. Transmute is such a fantastic keyword for EDH. So you just throw in a handful of Transmute cards like Teleria West. You can pull out any Manland. Oh, Transmute is fantastic. So to start off the kind of the backbone of this is I'm playing one of my favorite all-time Magic cards, creatures of all time, and that's Benevolent Unicorn. Because, again, the EDH potentially is a political game. It doesn't really do anything. It sits there. It's a 1-2 for white and colorless. It just reduces whenever a spell does damage to anything, it gets reduced by one. And luckily, Time Spiral decided to bless us with Plated Pegasus, which does the exact same thing with Flash and Fly. So now you have lots of ways to reduce damage. And then the one card I have in my deck that I would say borders on douchebaggery and multiplayer EDH, Steve and I have had a long love for this card, is Sun Droplet. Do you guys know what
that
Sun Droplet
is? That's not a douchebaggy card. That's a great card.
In a big player EDH where, unless they're doing like 10 damage to you each time, you're going to get all that life back by the time it gets back to you.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so Sun Droplet, whenever you're dealt damage, you put that many counters on it. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, you can remove a counter, and then if you do, you gain a life. So, fantastic card. You combine that with things like Aurum's Prayer, so whenever a creature attacks you, you get a life. And then you go into the cards that make everything cost more to do. And this is where people tend to get a little angry at you. So you have the Grand Arbiter Augustine the Fourth, which makes everything cost more for your opponent to cast and less for you. You have Glow Rider, which makes non-creature spells cost more to cast. You have Lodestone Golem, that makes non-artifact spells cost more to cast. Sphere of Resistance, all spells. Thorn of Amethyst, non-creature spells. You have Squeeze. Do you guys remember what Squeeze does?
Barely.
3 and a blue. Sorcery spells cost 3 more to cast.
Tom.
And going back into the... I started playing in a beta. Nether Void. All spells cost 3 more to cast.
I'm so proud of you.
Feyraza's Ban. All summoning spells cost 2 more to cast. So this means stuff takes a lot to cast, but eventually you're going to get a creature out. So I want to make it that they really can't afford to attack me with that creature. So I am using Propaganda, Ghostly Prison, Collective Restraint, the one that's the basically domain.
You did channel Zach with this one.
Windborne News.
I have to admit, Tom, I'm admiring your work right here. That's to tell you something.
Personal favorite that I just discovered when going through my comments thing is Rhystic Circle. 2 white, 2 colorless, enchantment, 1 colorless mana. Any player may pay 1. If no one does, the next time a source of your choice would deal damage, prevent that damage.
Oh, God, I'm laughing because I've used all these cards before.
And then, of course, you have to have the orbs around because I got 2 orbs. You got Static Orb and Winter Orb. And this combined with a bunch of different random walls and draw spells, evacuation, or Aura of Silence, excuse me, all artifact enchantment spells cost 2 more to play. I've had a lot of fun with this deck.
See, now do you see why I do it, Tom? It's so fun and rewarding in of itself, isn't it?
This deck so far has been a lot of fun.
It's fun to be a dick. Stay one with me.
It's more of a dipping.
What was that, Marcel?
I said it's more like you dip into it. Like you just do it too much, it just overwhelms you and you get consumed by your dickness.
And there's so many just good walls out there now. You have like, Wall of Frost, Wall of Denial, Fog Bank, the 0-2 flying wall that it doesn't deal nor receive any combat damage. Oh, such good fun.
Then
you're transmuting and drawing and all this random stuff. You're just like, yes, I love this.
Now, Tom, where you'll be a real dick is if your turn starts taking an hour or more to do. I've had that happen. That's fun.
Yeah, my turns usually don't take a lot. It's more when they're casting a spell, you have to like sort all the cards that are in play to figure out how much it's going to cost to actually cast that spell. Like, I want to cast an instant. How much will an instant cost to cast?
Oh,
if they're trying to cast a sorcery, that's going to be different. And a creature can also be different.
You need to send me this list, by the way.
This is why it's Mathematician's Wet Dream.
Post that on the show notes.
I'll try to type it in. That's the only bad thing about EDH is that to put up a deck list sometimes is painful. Because, of course, every card's different.
Think about everyone that's playing you. They're getting you back. It's the karma.
Yes. And then to top it off, you have Confiscate. So if they get something in play, I'm going to take it.
Are you running Blant and Thievery?
I am. I do not have that one in here right now.
Ooh, Tom. That'll be even more dicky than how dicky you are being right now.
Remind me, what does that one do? That one is not...
Okay. Bland Thievery, let me open my big book of magical crap. What does it do? What does it do? Flip a couple of pages. There's the blue. Okay, wrong blue.
Okay, I'll tell you what it does, since I was able to look it up faster than
you. Oh, I got it right here. Okay. Three blue and four colorless. It's a sorcery. For each opponent, gain control of target permanent that player controls. This effect does not end at the end of turn.
Ah, so for an extra blue, basically you get to target each, if it's multiplayer, and also it's not an enchantment, so once you get it, you've got it.
Exactly.
Interesting. I like
also
that.
Known as, I paint a giant target on my head.
Yes, and it has a big owl on it, so it even gets a little bit of that tribal flavor.
Hootie hoo.
So, hey, yeah. So, Jack, what cards will you not play with? Or
yeah.
By group?
What would make you rage quit?
Okay. What would make...
Mr. Butthead, you're on the stand now. Marcel's calling you out. I like this.
All right. As far as cards I will not play with, there's not really a lot of them. I'm not particularly fond of green, just because I'm not really a guy that likes using a lot of creatures. So pretty much anything green. I'm also disturbed by the fact that green has no real card draw. That really bothers me. Let's see here. I won't play with Visadrix. Mons, Goblin, Raiders. That card's just inherently bad. let's see what else.
Is there any cards that you wouldn't put out there because of the dickness of it?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, definitely. I like playing with this card, but you don't want to play with it in multiplayer because everybody just immediately hates you afterwards, especially if you nail a big threat like Inkwell Leviathan on the board. Armageddon. I refuse to play with that card because I've had so many games where I was like, yeah, I'm going to win. I'll resurrect Magister Sphinx out of the graveyard, put somebody at 10. Armageddon, yeah, go. No, don't do that. No. Despite how awesome and epic that might seem in your head, that's a really bad idea to do that, because then everybody immediately is going to spend every single mana they get coming after you. Land destruction generally is not fun for people, so what you need to do is like make it more like targeted land destruction. People don't get as angry about that, but any kind of mass land destruction really upsets people, so I try to play with as like minimal amount of that as possible. Plus, I mean, in the long run, like massive land destruction can screw you over pretty bad too, so what you gain out of destroying everybody's lands is not worth it.
Now, Jack, I have a slightly different take on Marcel's question. Is there any card that if an opponent played against you that would just make you immediately quit, like you'd like to do to your opponent?
Because
I'm going to write these down and then purchase them and play
against you. Anti-Jack deck.
Yeah.
I really don't like seeing a turn one Dark Ritual with a Thoughtseize and a Hymn to Turok. But okay. Other than that, something... Yeah, I mean, that's just something that bothers me, and I've played that myself, too. But as far as cards that make me quit as soon as I see them, they don't really exist. I mean, like, even in a hopeless situation, I try to play a match out, just because Magic is a game of, like, endless possibilities, especially in EDH, because you might top deck that one card you need. That is a realistic thing in Magic. Ask Gabriel Nassif about it, people. I mean, there's no cards that just make me quit, but I'm trying to think.
Take it and you get it.
Yeah, I mean, I will take it because I know as much as I dish it out to people, I certainly have it coming sometimes. I really don't like Rafik. I hate Rafik of the Many. I think it's a really dumb general to play in EDH simply because like you have to target it. You don't have a choice. And you know you're going to be taking the damage from the creature that is swinging. Because, of course, a smart player is not going to swing with Rafik. And my friends are dicks, so they play with things like Naginata. And they'll equip it to Baneslayer Angel after they get Rafik out. Oh, yeah, that's not fun. But, I mean, other than that, there's no cards that just make me rage quit. So,
okay, so that's interesting. If you want to email us, let us know if you have a card there. If you see that played against you, you just immediately quit. Like, I think a lot of people would maybe say a card like Stasis. Is that game...
No,
like,
Stasis is fun.
Oh, you're weird.
It's a tie.
For you, it's GTA?
Yeah, I quit. I hate that card. I'm sorry. I mean, you can play against it. Yeah, you can beat it, but... I just won't.
I'm going to go let you play your own game, because I'm not playing with you anymore. So I basically wanted to use that.
Oh, I did think of one. Reset's a pain in the butt. Reset. I hate seeing Reset played.
Is that just because of the combos around it, or just inherently that people tap their
like
lands?
The actual Reset deck, as bad as it is, it's basically like playing Masturbatory Magic, and... Like, being on the receiving end of that is so painful, because once they get it rolling, you're just going to sit there for a while, and you're not going anywhere.
And it's a really good example of the early Magic art that was just terrible.
Yeah.
It's like, here's your box of map markers. I need some art today for this card color reset.
It's actually like, I'm surprised nobody's brought this up in our weekly Hidden Penises and Magic discussion, because it's very phallic shaped.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Could be. If you had horns growing out your
Jack, if yours looks like this, you need to seek medical attention immediately. You need to get off of this show and be like,
"Ladies, wild."
What do you mean it's not supposed to have horns? Ah!
Hideous herpes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if people get like really bad things like genital warts, they can look like horns and stuff. Or like Lego trees. Do you guys do you ever play with Legos? You know the little green Lego trees?
Can we not kill my child this episode, please?
That's what they look like, but made out of flesh.
Yes, indeed.
Marcel wants to agree with me. He knows he shouldn't, but he wants to.
Yes, I see it. I've seen the light.
Do you guys have any other magic things before we run through our magic emails?
Go ahead, Tom. It's all on you.
Do you guys have anything you want to do before I run through mine?
Well, once again, big shout out to Brad for sending me the email about Mark Rosewater's article. And also, Brad had a very good question. Now, I couldn't answer this, but maybe some of our listeners can send me in something to help them out with, or maybe you, Tom, or maybe you, Marcel, can help me out. Brad came into possession of a piece of power, and he doesn't know if he should play with it or not. His friends have kind of been pressuring him to play with it. But he's afraid, you know, is that going to wear it down or anything like that? Now, me, there is no chance in hell that I will ever come into possession of power. Simply because, like, I don't know, I would probably, like, have to sell my kidney. And I need those because, like, I like Jack Daniels. But anyways, so,
Kidneys are, well, never mind.
Liver.
Liver.
Yeah. You're talking about liver.
Whichever body part
well,
that is.
I mean, you can have hepatorenal renal syndrome where if you lose your liver, get your kidneys. So, I'll give it to you that you were right, Jack.
Yeah, okay. As always, Tom. But, you know, chances of me ever having power are very slim, so this hasn't even ever, like, came into consideration for me.
He means
for
you guys, all aspects of his life, too. This is actually really sad.
Oh, ouch. Anyways, but have you got, now, Tom, like, you've mentioned before that you have a couple of pieces of power. Do you play with them? And if so, like, what kind of sleeves do you use? Because that's something Brad was concerned about.
Oh, to be honest, I don't. Because I don't really play a lot of...
Wise man.
But the thing is, like, what do you do with it? Like, I've come close to selling it because it sits in my binder.
And just, like, you open it up and the pages become illuminated suddenly and angels
start. I mean, there's a little bit, you can't get that ego stroke when if you're trained, they're like, oh my God, like, is this real? You always get, is this real? So you feel kind of good from that, but then you also feel really sad that, like, that's how you make yourself feel better. So I have this really nice page.
Shallow guy, very shallow.
But unfortunately, I mean, I think. Because I play mostly casual, and I mean, a lot of the power in themselves are not going to break the game. If I play a Black Lotus, it's not like I immediately win the game, but it allows you to do degenerate things really quickly. So I tend not to play with those in a casual deck. So they sit in my binder.
Well, my opinion of it, at least, is I think it's up to Brad and whoever actually owns power to do what they want to with the card, whether it be sell it or, you know, just keep it in a nice, like, gold-gilded page in the back of your trade book. There are actually, and I've actually mentioned this before the show, there's a guy who is getting Disney characters painted on his power. Now, it's somewhere deep in the bowels of the MTG Salvation Altered Art thread. But, I mean, you know, obviously if people are willing to do that, they're willing to damage their power or whatever. It's basically, it's your property. Do what you want with it, folks.
Well, I mean, I can tell you when we've been playing forever, when cards first started actually become more valuable, like, you know, $10, $20, you know, $30, $40, $50, you know, this is around when Ice Age was starting to come out, and things like, from Arabian Nights, like Juzam, Dins, and stuff, those were starting to be worth money. We would play as that you would, it was kind of like a half proxy. And this is around when you first started to play with sleeves. We actually bought the baseball card sleeves. You didn't have actual Magic card sleeves yet. So the cards would move around and they could get kind of damaged. We would put a proxy in and then we would have our expensive cards in. Again, we used sports card protective devices. Those like big, like plexiglass kind of screw down cases that they make for sports cards. Where they're each like a quarter inch thick and you kind of sandwich the card between them.
Yes, I had those too. For Sheevan Dragon.
Exactly. And what we did is we would have our favorite cards or our expensive cards in those, and then when you played the proxy, you would just grab the big lucite, you know, encased Juzam or whatever it was, and then put that on top of the proxy. So it was kind of like you're playing with it, but you didn't risk damaging the card. And I always have to say is, if you bought, you know, decent, I don't know, Dragon Shield, whatever sleeves you like, I can't say unless, like, the sleeve ripped apart and, like, the cards fell on the floor, I don't think my cards are ever getting damaged by being in the sleeves. I don't know if anybody can say it differently, but I can't say I've had that experience.
Depends how I played the card. If it's new mint, you're going to lose your rating. But other than that,
I mean, it's a good point. Yeah, it's not fresh out of the pack, I guess, if you put it into a sleeve and play it with it.
Yeah, so it depends how good the card is, but hey, I wouldn't do it if someone paid me to do that.
Yeah, like, I would be tempted to honestly do like we did in the old days, have the proxy, and if your piece of power is really nice, you may want to get it, like, BSA graded, because that really jacks up the price if you can get it graded at, like, an 8 or above. People are going to pay a premium for really nice quality pieces of power.
Then have you ever heard about the Chaos Orb myth?
I have a Chaos Orb. What's the myth?
Oh, I heard from way back that during a tournament, some guy had his Chaos Orb, and he actually ripped it into individual pieces and spread it over the whole table and killed like a bunch of stuff. And because of the wording and everything, he was able to do it.
Oh, we heard similar rumors where people used to like put their cards underneath the table and like tape them to the wall and all types of stuff to get away from it. That's why they finally said, hey, we don't want Chaos Orbs in our tournaments anymore because this is getting stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that would be my answer. I would say, you know, play with it, but like you said, Jack, is do what you want. I mean, that's in the end, do whatever the hell you want with it.
Yeah, exactly. Because regardless of what other people are going to say, it's still your property, man.
You can join the Pen 15 Club on the card. I don't care. It's your piece of power. Do whatever you want.
Send it to me. I'll take it.
Have you ever fallen for the Pen 15 Club?
I have no. Is this another weird fetish that we're going to talk about after the show?
No. This is elementary school. Marcel, do you know the Pen 15 Club?
No, I don't.
So this is okay. If you're in elementary school, listen to this. You can pull this out. People probably know what it is. You go up to your friend and you say, hey, do you want to join the Pen 15 Club? You know, how do you join the Pen 15 Club? All you have to do is write Pen 15 on the back of your hand. If you take your pen right now and write a piece of paper, write Pen 15 in capitals, what does it look like?
Penis?
Yes.
Oh, gee, thank you, Tom. Yay. Now
it's on my hand. Okay, thank you.
Once again, Magic, Monday Night Magic is a family show. Let's reiterate that.
Well, that's Pen 15, man. That's,
yeah, I mean, it is Pen 15. It's not penis at all.
That's totally legit. All right, but good question. So, yeah, if you're listening, if you have a way that you, like, how do you use your power if you're maybe more of a casual player, if you're not playing big legacy tournaments, let us know, because Brad can be helped out by this. And did he say what piece of power he got?
It was a Mox Sapphire, I believe.
Oh, so the kind of the good Mox. Okay. Or they're all good, but the one that everybody used to want for the first turn counterspell.
No, man, I totally think that like Mox Opal is like the redheaded stepchild and just gets beat. It's only worth $100 less than some other pieces.
Is it worth more or less than the green one? I always thought the green was the least.
I don't know. I was just saying crap off the top of my head, like I always do. Not really, though.
How about for you, Marcel? I mean, we're finally having you back on the show now with the new headset. Do you have any emails from the last few weeks you wanted to share with us?
Actually, I haven't, I guess, because I've been out the loop. So.
Well, he is back in. So before I go through mine, we love to get emails. We have a lot of questions for you this week. Obviously, you can email me. I am pitimp@mtgcast.com. Marcel, where should they email you at?
Marcel@mtgcast.com.
And Jack, are you going to say your 3,000-letter-long Jaboing forum jump, whatever it is?
All right. The best way to find me is jack@mtgcast.com. That's my email for the show. You can also reach me on Twitter @JackLaCroix, which is also tied into my blog where I sometimes talk about Magic, occasionally, which in the next coming days, I'm going to have my article about how to be a dick in Magic and survive. And I'm also working on a side project called Power Failure.
Okay, I saw this on your thing, and I didn't know what you're – because you said you're working on some project.
Yeah, I don't really want to give out too many details because really the only thing that keeps people interested in me is the mystique and allure of Jack LaCroix. So let's just say that this is either going to be probably the best part of your day or something that you dismiss instantly the moment you read it.
Are you sure people aren't going to be around you for the really useful tips like immersing your computer in fish oil so you can therefore overclock it more?
There could be that. I mean, you know, personally, I think people will stay around for how I'm going to talk about pig parties in my next entry. What?
Yeah. Okay. Word of the wise, if there's anybody under the age of about 65, I would say, listen to the show. Whatever you do, do not put in pig party and take moderate search off. Or what is it? Safe search in Google. Don't do it. I'm just going to tell you right now, don't do it.
And that also reminds me, I should probably mention that my blog is not always work safe because, well, as everybody knows, I love the lady. So occasionally there's going to be some artistic photography on my page. So by all means, you go there at your own risk. But there is occasionally some magic-related paraphernalia on there.
All right, so let's go through the few. If I miss your email this week, I apologize. I admit I'm kind of doing this off the cuff since I just got back this morning. Cyrix, he wrote in. He said his local game store, they had a booster draft yesterday of their last box of World Wake. So, of course, we're in Jace the Mind Sculptor territory. Nobody yet had cracked a Jace from the draft. So one of the players in his draft decided to buy six packs in hope of getting this last Planeswalker. While he was paying, another player bought one single pack, made it known that he was buying the pack, and then opened it while this other guy buying six packs was waiting to check out. He then pulled out a full art land foil, which is good, and of course the second card was Jace the Mind Sculptor. The six pack guy, he ended up still buying the six packs and got two Anowon the Rune Sage.
Woo-hoo!
And Cyrix is also the one, as Jack alluded to a little bit earlier, sent in cracked.com. If you haven't ever checked it out, it's a fantastic onion-like site where people write a lot of top six, top ten articles. They're based on real life, but they're comedy. And usually they're really, really good. And Cyrix sent in one because they did a poster about sci-fi original movies, because of which I love these. I TiVo these things all of the time. So he went through and looked up actual sci-fi original titles. You can do this right on their website and just kind of put these into different, what do you call them, categories. And he, of course, ends up with which everybody's believing is going to be the ultimate made-for-TV B-horror movie called Sharktopus, which is a half-shark, half-octopus.
Beautiful.
It is beautiful.
We're on a grizzly bear and we got a movie.
I don't care if you are a professional film critic and you've never watched a movie that was a talkie, you are going to enjoy Sharktopus. I don't think you can have vision and not enjoy this movie. It's going to be so unbelievably bad, there's going to be something there to entertain you. So we will have a link to this poster, because, I mean, and I've seen most of these. Mansquito is one that's pretty bad. Carney, really, really bad. Yeah, there's so many good ones on here. Mega Piranha.
Mega Piranha was epic.
Yes, that was Alien Apocalypse, that's a Bruce Campbell one. That one's probably worth watching. Let's see, next we had Brad W. Conley, hopefully be back here next week. He wanted to let us know that Shining Force is now available for the iPhone for $2.99. That's a pretty good deal.
Can't beat it.
Dan from CCGGamers.org, he's the one running the Games for Troops, that kind of non-for-profit, what would you call that? Fun drive? I don't know. Basically, he wants to get game supplies to send to troops overseas so they have something to do. He wanted to let me know he's now also doing a local fundraiser for a charity called Dance for Dakota. And Dance for Dakota, this is a way of raising money. Dakota has neuroblastoma. And kind of going through, she has a high risk of recurrence with this. She's undergoing treatment. And this is her way of just raising money to help pay off her medical bills. And how he is helping us, they're having a raffle for a Magic the Gathering 15th anniversary white mana life counter. I had never really heard of this. He has a link to Troll and Toad. Apparently these things go for about $150. And if you guys look at this, it looks like this very complex mechanical metal life counter. And apparently these are worth around $150. If you want to, you can buy a raffle ticket. They're $1 a piece, and you'll be entered into a drawing to win one of these. And if you want to get one of these raffle tickets, what you do is you send a $1 PayPal donation to the email address dalpers@hotmail.com. The winner will be announced August 8th or August 9th. Dan's been a very cool guy. He's doing all these really neat things to promote just gaming in general and doing good things for his community. So I wanted to help out with this and mention this to everybody.
Yeah, Life Counter looks very cool, too. I want mine. So I'll give $1 for that.
Yeah, so give it a try. It's a raffle, and Dan is a trustworthy guy. You know, if this was some person I never heard of from before, probably wouldn't tell you to send him $1 through PayPal. Would not recommend that. Also want to say is I got an email from Leonard C. Leonard is actually the artist from a couple of years ago that made our current logo on the website. Remember the one with kind of the three hosts and it says MTGCast? He just emailed and said, hey, you got the new nice site design. Do you want me to redo the logo to match your site better? I, of course, said yes. So I want to say thank you to Leonard. He's actually remaking some of the logos. And I offered to send him some packs for it. He said, only send me packs if you like the logo. So I thought that was pretty classy. Next is Jack T. He sent in that his most hated card of all time was Isochron Scepter.
Oh, come on.
So what do you guys think about Isochron Scepter? In itself, very innocuous. What gets stuck to it will want you to beat your own brains out.
Well, that's exactly why you hate the stick, really, there, right?
So my question, what is the most annoying card to stick on an Isochron Scepter?
Oh, come on, Tom. We all know that answer.
Is it Orym's Chant? Like, what do you... Orym's... A Bounce Spell? Like, what do you... Lightning Helix? What's your most annoying card to put on there? Counterspell? Isochron, Scepter, if you haven't seen one, it's from Mirrodin. Artifact, two colorless, Imprint, which is a really cool keyword. When Isochron Scepter enters the battlefield, you may exile an instant card with converted mana cost 2 or less. It then says, two colorless tap, you may copy the exiled card. If you do, you may cast a copy without paying its mana cost. So basically, you stick on an instant 2 or less, and then you can just keep reusing that. So I think for me, I was most annoyed when people put on Counterspell. So I did not like people countering something every turn.
Counterspell, the Chant, Lightning Helix, all of the above. I hate them all.
So you are not a fan of Orym's Chant, Isochron Scepter, I'm saying.
No. Or Silence on there.
Silence, Orym's Chant, if people, again, need to go back, a Plane Shift, just one white, Pez Kicker, target player can't cast spells this turn. That tends to be irritating.
Yeah, sounds like a Jack card for you.
Yep.
It is. But, I mean, you guys are not thinking outside the box enough. I think Lightning Helix is the most annoying damn card you can put on that thing, right next to Boomerang. And my reasoning on that is Lightning Helix would put you on a clock, whereas Orym's Chant just allows you not to play spells. You know you're going to be taking damage at the end of your turn if they have Lightning Helix on it. Plus, they're going to be gaining life. So, I mean, even when you're trying to win the game, you're going to be losing the game simultaneously very slowly, which is more annoying. Boomerang, if you're playing casual and you've ever played with the Vivids or any of the Tablands or anything like that, Boomerang on an Isochron Scepter will ruin your day. I should know because I've done this to people.
And Jack T or Jack Thomas, he is also the host of one of our new podcasts on the network, MTG Splosion, which has had it's a very unique podcast. It's had a very interesting response to the show. So definitely go check that out. Next we have, and this is actually from our listener, Arturo, and he wanted to let us, we had mentioned before about these 6-card booster packs in the past. And he actually he took a photo with his camera of an M11 6-card booster pack. Have you guys seen these at all in the wild?
No, not at all.
Yeah, so they do exist for M11. Here's a picture of an M11 6-card booster pack. Where he got it, I have no idea.
Would you ever buy one of those, Tom?
No. I can't see why anybody would ever buy these.
I don't understand either. I think it's a horrible idea, but I mean, I guess it works for them because some people do have that limited money.
Yeah, I know we talked about these a little bit before. Is there a rare in every pack, or is it kind of... Is it some sort of like a random, like a semi-random collection of cards you get out of them?
It's a semi-random collection, and it costs just slightly less than a regular booster pack, which is the most depressing feature of it.
And you might get a rare in the pack. It's a maybe.
Whee! Okay, guys, you're selling me. Keep it going.
And so you get a Jason every 1,000 packs, I believe? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Let's see. Next, we have a listener, Maxim from Australia. Just wanted to say, first-time writer... short-time listener for 3 months. And he just wanted to send a link to... this is on TCG Player. Is a deck list from the Australia Nationals of a deck with Frost Titan. And this is that Destructive Force of Frost Titan and Primeval Titan deck. So, wanted to say thank you to Maxim for letting us know about the Frost Titan love.
Yes. I'm actually can't wait to play with this deck.
Yeah, it does look like a pretty cool deck, so I have to give that one credit. Eddie K emailed in, this is while I was gone on vacation, why I know where the hell the show was this past week. And Eric did a monumental job, and he did get it up. So hopefully, Eddie, you've listened to it by now. And he also mentioned some of the dirty card art. Next, we have... the listener is Sly Fox, and he just wanted to let me know about a terrible B-horror movie he saw last night called Feast. And apparently, it involves an inbred family of monsters attacking a backcountry bar. It says it has boob, stereotype, senseless gore, and ley-line thin plots, and were bad by all. So thank you for that.
So it was filmed in North Carolina?
Barely, and then they just flew over to North Dakota for a little bit of time. Because, I don't know, this is something, if you're over 21, and if you'd like to you frequent bars. I love to go. I call them townie bars. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Slightly.
When you go to a small town, like a lot of us are from, this is the local bar. You know, this is not the Bar and Grill or the TGI Fridays or Applebee's. This is that bar where it has enough windows where you know it's not a strip club, but not enough windows to be like an acceptable establishment. And usually those windows exactly can't be seen through by all the hanging neon signs for beer, you know, whatever random beer ads that they have. But also that's where you tend to go into those places. And also you get some of the more interesting experiences with other patrons where they probably will talk to you because you're sitting at the bar because there's maybe a couple of tables. So I wanted to say this just made me think about townie bars. And whenever I go back to home to North Dakota, I always go to the townie bars, especially if anybody's from Kildare, North Dakota. You have the best townie bar I've ever been to. So congratulations. Let's see. Ophidian emails in. He wanted to agree that he thinks Crystal Ball is a very dirty piece of card art. And then Jim E., I will share this video with some of the co-hosts before I share this on a widespread. So he says he loves the show. He likes to listen to Monday Night Magic and Limited Resources every week. He also likes the Tribal Time videos, especially after I did Bears Gone Wild. So he had to send me this video. It's called Montana Pole Dance. And I will share this with you guys after the show.
Oh, great.
Marcel, it can't get any worse. So I don't know what you're worried about. It can't be any worse than what we've already looked at before the show.
I'm not getting any sleep tonight.
Look, it's like I said before the show started. Tom, some of the crap I have learned just becoming friends with you and talking with other people on this show, like my mind was so much cleaner before I ever came on here.
Now, Marcel, what I want you to really think about that will make you never sleep again is, you know, right now we're looking at two-dimensional displays. Imagine what we searched, but in the world where everything is a 3D display. Imagine that.
Oh, no.
My anus just holograms.
Coming right at your eyes. You're like, ah! Be like that 3D shark from Back to the Future 2. Ah! And that is all the emails I got, because I didn't get any this past week because I wasn't on the show. But, of course, send us emails. We love them. For This Week in Magic is not a ton. Oh, a cat's attacking my foot. This Week in Magic. Because, I don't know, we all know that I have this cat. It's aging. She is clearly a senior citizen cat now. I've never had a cat that I think has become senile until this cat. Like, you'll give her food, and she will see it, and then, like, you know, go take a dump, or whatever cats do for a few minutes, and she'll forget it's there. Cats are not the most intelligent animals, but they're not that dumb, usually. And also, because I was gone for a week, if people have pets, I don't know, I'm talking cats in specific, but pets in general, I mean, the thing was insane when I got home. Like, it wanted to live inside my face. I think that's what it was trying to do. And do either of you guys have any pets where, like, they get so attention-starved they become insane?
Our goats used to be that way. Like, when we would leave for a week or, like, on vacation or whatever, why does everybody laugh as soon as I say go?
I mean, I was thinking of a more sexual nature there, Jack. I thought maybe they were just...
Okay, look, I used to live on a farm, all right? We raised goats and chickens. I am sorry. But anyways, so our goats, if we left them alone for a week, we had this one we called Houdini, and Houdini would bash her head against the gate until it gave way and would, like, just ransack the neighborhood.
Ah, that's a...
Yeah,
to wake up.
That's real good.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Also, for our MTG Cast news, it's very brief. Overall, the response to our Make Your Own From the Vault sets has been amazing. Have you guys looked through some of these entries so far?
Well, it's good to know what kind of listeners we have. I mean, they're all such gentlemen with their hidden penises and from the vault hotties.
There's so many good ones. Yeah, when you see ones like From the Vault, Epic Beards, and stuff like this, I mean, some of these are really, really creative and really, really well done. Yeah, but yeah, there's quite a few penises and boobs, and yeah, some of these are incredibly well done. A lot of ooze ones, but I mean, so far we have almost 100 entries. So I will say is, you know, we have a bunch of these prize packs, t-shirts, Arch Enemy decks. I'm going to be throwing in a whole slew of singles as well, because I want to give out a lot of prizes. Because, again, I do this every time, I just add more prizes. But we get so many good entries, I just feel bad not rewarding a lot of people. So I want to say kudos to everybody. You have done a job above and beyond what I expected for this Make Your Own From the Vault set. I wish we could share some of this sometimes from Wizards of the Coast, where, like, maybe you should do, like, some similar sort of contest for your website, because the response we get is just amazing. If you put something like this on the Mothership site, obviously they probably wouldn't be doing the penises ones, but some of the other ones are, like, Epic Beards and things like this. So you could easily have that on the site. I mean, it's PG-13 stuff.
Within reason.
Yeah.
But they did. They did do that one build a deck recently, and I think they only had like 150. So we're what at 100 posts? That's pretty good, right
there. They only had 150 entries for that.
I believe so, somewhere around that range.
And they didn't give me a prize for my 40 Frost Titan and 4 Kraken Eye deck. I'm very.
It might have had something to do with the comment we made as we entered the deck, though, Tom.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, this is something. Oh, and Hector, I still need to get your address to send you your prize. But you know, Hector posted the word. I don't listen to the show again where I say things I honestly don't remember saying. Where I don't believe that I've said that, then when people put the little timestamp, I'll be like, wow, I actually said that.
Selective memory.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed by that.
What do you mean I murdered 3 people? Shush you.
Murdered, manslaughter. You're talking semantics now. Yeah, From the Vault for the Win, which is a collection of alternate win conditions, I thought was a really good one. Yeah, there's so many good ones on here. So, links in the show notes. If you have some free time, just browse through all the entries and you'll have a good time. And the last thank you I wanted to say is to Chris Otwell. Actually went through and every single podcast on the MTG Cast now has its own iTunes feed and page. So you can actually search for Limited Resources, MTG Explosion, whatever you want, and you can find that on iTunes. So I want to say thank you to Chris. I'm not sure how he did it. If he put in each one separately, you are a saint, because that had to be a ton of work. So if everybody, if you are using iTunes to listen to shows besides Monday Night Magic, send a thank you to Chris. OtwellC@mtgcast.com, just send him a thank you.
Yes, Chris, thank you. Yeah, deserve a clap for that.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing the work that we are too lazy to do ourselves.
Because if people, I mean, you know, Chris is a co-host on the show, but he does a lot of the help of hosting up a large number of the shows and just kind of helping maintain the site that is mtgcast.com. This is something we started tracking some of the kind of listener or hit statistics. I mean, we're nothing probably compared to like the Star Kingdom Post or MTG Salvation, but we get a surprising amount of hits every month. And it's actually pretty impressive. So that's something where I want to say thank you. And Chris is somebody that helps, because for me, every once in a while, people know about once a year, I like to try to quit the show and quit the site in general. And then people wrangle me back in. Chris helps to make that so that doesn't happen as often. Otherwise, it would be like once a month.
It's a team effort. That's what it is.
It is.
You can't let the trolls get to you, Tom. You just got to embrace it and like accept the fact that haters are going to hate.
Usually it's more like when like a show gets eaten, like you lose like a 2-hour chunk of your life, and you're like, nope, I'm done. This isn't worth it anymore.
I hate Windows. Raw.
So, guys, we are at the end of the show. So if you are listening for Magic content, guess what? You're done. You can stop listening now, because we want to talk a little bit about video games, and this is because StarCraft II came out. Have either of you guys played StarCraft II yet?
Oh, you guys are nerds. No, I've not played StarCraft II.
Yes.
No.
Entire countries are playing this. Don't call me a nerd for playing. That is bullshit.
And Korea is a national sport.
Yeah.
No. You guys need to be real men and play Team Fortress 2, specifically with me, so I actually have some people I like know to play with.
There's a difference between playing Team Fortress 2 and then trying to play it a few times and basically just embarrassing yourself to quit playing.
But that's why you keep playing, Tom. I mean, it's like Team Fortress 2 is like a relationship, right? You have to work at it constantly, and sometimes it goes absolutely nowhere, but if you try hard enough...
Well, I feel lame for two reasons when I play that game, because one, I always have to play Medic, because, you know, arguably it's the, quote, easy...
Okay, you're playing Medic.
Medic.
That is your first mistake, playing Medic.
I got the love hose, so, you know, I'm sucking off some heavy gunner guy. And then I also feel nerdy because, I'm a doctor, I should play the Medic. It's like, damn it, I should just stop playing this game. I feel stupid.
No, you never play the Medic, because the Medic's always got to get behind the Heavy. What you do is you play some class that you know is going to just tremendously troll the other team. I particularly like to roll Sniper and Demo Guy.
Okay, apparently I've gotten old enough where I can't play, unless I were to get like these first-person shooters like the first day they came out, I'm always going to be outclassed when I play those games to the point where it's not fun for me.
Oh, I'm terribly outclassed, too. I think the longest I've ever lived on the game is maybe 5 minutes, if I'm lucky. But, I mean, the point is, Team Fortress 2 is a lot of fun. You guys need to get on there and play, and then send me your name so I can kill you on the opposing team.
I will do that. It's part of the...
The Orange Box,
yeah. Yeah, you get the Orange
Box.
Or you can just buy it separately now. But, yeah, but if you have Orange Box, you have TF2.
Yeah, I believe I have it. Actually, I might take you up on that, Jack.
It is a fun game. You do have to do a little bit of pre-reading because there's so many like alternate weapons and, you know, depending on what class you can build shit and heal people.
The fun thing about it is, too, I've actually been playing on the Alpha Omega server lately, and apparently, like, I did not know this going into
this.
You play
a church? Like, what are you doing?
No. Oh, interesting story on that, though. No, Alpha Omega, they make their own, like, custom maps, and I didn't know you could actually do that with Team Fortress 2. So I load into the game, right, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to kill some people. Yeah, I'm psyching myself out, changing my loadout for my sniper. And suddenly the map starts up, and I hear Mike spam about, like, homoerotic stories featuring the Mario Brothers. Everything's psychedelic, and my character is up in the air just dropping, and the whole level was free-fall shooting people until you reach the end and die.
Okay, apparently we play games for different reasons. That sounds stupid.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds really, really dumb, but it was kind of amusing for about 5 minutes. But no, actually, there was a church server that I joined up with. It was called, like, Soldiers of Team Fortress 2, Soldiers of Faith, or something like that. And
I'm sorry, I should be laughing. I'm sorry.
actually, it was really cool. Like, these are the only guys I could find that were not absolute dicks on the mic. But the interesting thing about it is they had a minister that would get on Sundays, right? And the minister would actually give a sermon while playing Team Fortress 2. Now, where this gets funny is, like, you could tell when the minister was in a firefight because he would just be going through a Bible verse.
So he was playing while doing this?
Yes, he was playing while doing this.
Oh, wow.
And, that's kind of... Yeah, yeah, and he would. You could tell when he was in a firefight because it would be all. And my father sent him to me. God damn it! Somebody cover me! Ah, oh, 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 medic, medic! Ah, amen.
Well, whatever church this, I have to give them credit where they're trying to reach people through where young people are at. I guess I'll give them credit for that.
Props to them. Yeah.
Amen. Amen.
Well, it's kind of similar where, you know, for World of Warcraft, they're actually getting behavioralists. I don't think they're actually playing the game. They're more like these, not adepts or whatever the little, what do you call the people that aren't, I guess they're kind of in the game, but they're there more as like administrative or to help people out if they have problems.
I'm probably one of three people that's not played World of Warcraft. So.
I played a lot. I can't remember what I know people are screaming right now, whatever the name of those people, but they're actually getting the behavioralist now for people that are having problems with addiction to the game to get them treatment where they're at with their addiction, which is in the freaking game.
Wow.
So wait, I'm gonna play the game to get over my addiction of playing the game.
Well, it says like you have to somehow get like they usually when you've like sold yourself because you wouldn't stop to use the bathroom, you probably realize you have a problem. You just don't know how to like chip away at that. So at least they're like the initial contact for that help is where you're already at, which is playing that game.
I see the thought process behind it, but something about this just screams counterproductive to me.
Yeah, it's interesting, but it's find a way to use games and things to basically get in contact with the group that you want by going to where they are. Not saying, you need to come to me, you need help, or you need to go to church. Be like, I know where they're at, they're playing TF2, they're playing WoW, let me go there and try to get them. So Marcel, you have StarCraft, I can't download right now because we're recording, but as soon as we're done recording, I'm downloading StarCraft 2 overnight. Is it amazing?
I can't really play it too much. It's been crashing for me. My graphics card been going wrong. My Comcast isn't fast enough. I actually got to play one game, and I smashed someone, but I will have to get back to you on a full report. But from what I've seen so far, I like it, and I know that Wizards of the Coast is going to hate it because I might not be playing Magic as much now.
Yeah, this is something where I'm usually more of a single-player guy, so I can hopefully next week when we come back, I'll play some Magic, I promise, but we'll also share a little bit with our StarCraft 2 experience because, and again, and we were talking this about before the show, is the feedback that we get about Monday Night Magic to me is always fascinating, is that there's these two camps, and one camp loves the occasional non-Magic, potentially gross medical story banner, and the other group that doesn't. And that's why we always try to keep the show as a balance, because we can't ever make the show perfect for everybody. And also we have to... What's that?
If you're not giving them the mall, and they'll pick what they like, and that's that.
Exactly, and that's why we're kind of doing this, where we segregate it. All the Magic stuff is mostly at the beginning, and if you want to listen to the video game movie talk, that's always going to be at the end, where if you don't want to listen to it, you're just like, you can turn it off, and you're fine. So
exactly.
So guys, yeah, I'll be able to tell you more next week about my StarCraft 2 experience. It's probably going to be pretty good. I'm just hoping my computer can run it, because it's not the newest thing on the planet. And it's not dipped in fish oil right now, so who knows what'll happen to it.
Oh, I wish I'd never told you guys that now.
Yeah. Is it a certain type of fish oil?
I read the article probably like a year ago, but what had happened is the gentleman had simply gotten just fed up with trying to keep his overheating computer like cool. So what he did basically is he ripped out the guts and tossed it in fish oil because it didn't conduce electricity. And like the picture of it was just the computer submerged in fish oil in a tank. With power cords running out of the fish oil, which to me seems kind of like a fire hazard. I don't know about you guys, but so it apparently kept the computer cool. Now, that being said, being a PC tech, I cannot advise or condone anybody to do this. So, you know, you don't really want to do this. Of course,
I want you to call the Geek Squad when your computer stops working at home and they come over. There's just a tank of fish guts and oil and a beer. You're like, what, really?
Well, I don't know how the Geek Squads are elsewhere, but here in North Carolina, they are terrible. So they would probably end up coming to me anyways. But that being said, the gentleman just got tired of doing it, so he tossed it in fish oil, and it worked perfectly. Of course, and this is a lot like, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of quiet computing.
Like fanless computing or something like that?
Yeah, what it is there are whole communities devoted to keeping your computer as quiet as humanly possible. And there was actually a guy that put he recycled an old refrigerator and somehow wired the coils on it to where it would keep his computer cool but not freezing. And there wouldn't be any condensation or ice crystals within the unit. And he put his computer inside of that and it worked perfectly.
Yeah, I guess I know this more from the home theater PC side where people like they want to have as quiet of a PC as possible for their run as their TiVo or their media server.
Yeah, and I mean, there's all kinds of cool stuff you can do now, like solid-state drives and, like, rubberized holdings for them.
Yeah, the cases and the mountings would be all rubber now. And
anyways, I'm being way more exponentially of a nerd than you guys were talking about StarCraft. So anyways, yeah.
You wound up this.
Yeah, I'm a certainly did. Touché, yes.
But guys, I wanted to say thank you for joining me. It was a fantastically fun episode, and hopefully, can you guys join me next week?
I should be back from Tennessee by then, so yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Who wouldn't want to come back from Tennessee?
Well, I'm going out to see some family, so hopefully it won't be too bad of a trip.
Is Tennessee the show-me state, or is that Memphis? Which one's the show-me state?
Every state I'm in is the show-me state.
Memphis is Tennessee.
Is that Tennessee?
Memphis is in Tennessee.
Oh, I'm really, yep.
I don't know. We're going to some
big ball. I'm on my A game today. What state is... So, yes, all apparently, right. If it is for Tennessee, it's also for Memphis. Yes, Tom, yes.
Simultaneously.
Yeah. So, yeah, thank you guys for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a good week. Play some Magic. Play some StarCraft 2, and we'll see you next week.
Play all Team right, Fortress 2.
Or that. We'll take that, too.
Yeah. Anyways, bye.